This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Our special guest on Talk Louisiana Now is the person who heads the largest agency in state government and perhaps is the foremost CEO in Louisiana. She has 5,000 employees and a $14 billion annual budget. Rebecca Gee. Dr. Gee is Secretary of the Department of Health and Hospitals, 15 months on the job, and it's been quite an indoctrination. You have a long experience in state government, but nothing quite like this.
That's right, Jim. It's been a great 15 months. I think, of course, the highlight of it, and the governor spoke to this to the full legislature yesterday, has been our Medicaid expansion. We started off with one of the higher uninsurance rates in the country, so more people not having insurance than other states throughout our nation. We have dropped that rate significantly. Over 400,000 working people now have health insurance, so it's been an incredibly rewarding year.
Now, how 400,000 additional people, right?
That's right. So we have 1.6 million individuals covered, but 415,000 people who are working, who made too much to qualify for Medicaid previously, are now covered with insurance.
Well, it's an uncertain future, as we know, and it looked maybe a few weeks ago like the whole Affordable Care Act would be done away with, but that did not happen. So where do we stand right now?
You know, Jim, I'm not that worried about it. I think, you know, certainly the Congress could act and take health insurance away from 24 million Americans, which was what the estimates were that bill would do. But if they do it, they're not getting reelected. So I think what they learned is it's a lot harder to rule than to proclamate that something's wrong. And, you know, they had 7 years to think about a fix, and what they came up with was not a very good plan. And so I think what we're going to see is that we're going to live with Obamacare, but we're going to have to fix Obamacare. The Medicaid expansion is something that the Republican governors love, who have done it and have written letters that to the president and to the Congress saying they don't want it messed with. The Democratic governors, like our governor, we have seen hundreds of millions just this year, $300 million-plus savings. Last year, over $200 million savings. That allowed us to keep the TOPS program intact, at least fund part of it, and we would have had a much worse budget situation without it. So you'll see that people, the Medicaid expansion's been successful. The problem is the Obamacare exchange markets that really have issues. So I think what you're going to see, and we're working with Senator Cassidy, we're working with others to come up with ideas, is that we need to fix some of the insurance markets. But, you know, let's not throw out the baby with the bathwater. And I don't think that the Congress will overturn it. I'm not worried about it.
All right. You're optimistic, but we'll see what happens. But there's still talk of that. And sometimes people get antsy when there is uncertainty. Certainly, when you look at the stock market, for example, it moves a lot on uncertainty. But how can you make contingency plans when you really don't know what's going to happen next?
Well, we have to plan. Even the plan that some Republicans put forward in the House, we were talking about 2020 things happening. We have to think about the here and now in this budget year. Right now, there is no reason not to have a Medicaid expansion. Again, 415,000 people covered, and not just a card. You know, they didn't just get a Medicaid card. We have seen one of the most successful rollouts in the nation. I became a doctor because my mom died of breast cancer when I was 16. That's an issue that's really important to me. And we've seen over 6,000 women in the state who did not have access to mammograms or care get a mammogram, almost 100 new diagnoses of breast cancer, people getting treatment. Almost 8,000 colonoscopies, almost 7,000 people who have been diagnosed with diabetes and hypertension who can have their lives saved and lives improved by the diagnosis, and almost 80,000 people have had a primary care visit. That's many of them maybe for the first time in their adult lives. So this is working really, really well. It's also working well for our state budget. Again, this year alone, $300 million savings that allows us to fund public schools, higher education, and other things that we want to spend money on. So it's a no-brainer now. Now, if it changes, we're a ship on the ocean, and we'll change course. But for now, this makes so much sense, and it's saving lives, and it's really turned the tide of health for our state. Was 50th most unhealthy state in the nation. We are now seeing lives saved and enormous change in a very quick period of time where people are healthier in this state. That means healthier working people, people who can hold jobs better. So all of this is good, and we're going to continue with it until we get the message otherwise.
Your number is 877-217-5757 or in Baton Rouge, 297-5633. For Dr. Rebecca Gee, who was an authority on Medicaid before she took this job. This isn't just something she started discerning 15 months ago. You were the state's Medicaid person, and in our state, with our, as you noted, our large population of people who don't have means, the Affordable Care Act and its inception affects us far more than it would a wealthier state.
That's right. We have some of the highest numbers of children born into poverty of any state in the nation. And so these are federal tax dollars, and it's over $1 billion a year, about $1.5 billion a year that comes into our state that wasn't coming to our state before. It's our tax dollars coming back. Previously, there were 30 other states that were taking them, and we weren't. So this is a benefit, and we need it more. We've had more challenges. We've had weather events. We've had an economic downturn. Our economy relies on the price of oil much more so than most states. We've had hard times, and this is something that's a lifesaver for our budget and for our health. And so I would argue that the nation, it's why you have the United States. The states that are wealthier sometimes have to help out the states that have less means, and Louisiana is the cultural mecca, I think, of this nation. We have the best food, the best music, the most fun people. And so, you know, I think it's worth it for the federal government to come in and step in and help us sometimes when times are hard.
297-5633 for Dr. Rebecca Gee, who you can see is just full of enthusiasm about the Affordable Care Act and what's happened in Louisiana. And as we know, there are some critics, and if you are one of those, we'd like to hear from you as well. 877-217-5757 is your number. Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Good morning, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning, Jim, and welcome back, sir. So glad to have you here.
Thank
again.
You.
Yeah, you're welcome. I was looking at just the actuarial factors involved in insurance. Isn't it true that the more people that are in a group plan have more clout in purchasing drugs and also spreading savings across a greater number of people? I think that's one of the things that could go forward to fixing the Affordable Care Act, and hopefully we'll work towards that.
Phil, I think you're absolutely right, and that's one of the big opportunities we have now is to figure out how do we get more young, healthy people to enroll in the Obamacare exchanges, because that was one of the biggest problems is the penalties just weren't high enough for the young, what we call the young invincibles, those kids who think nothing will happen to them, to join. You have to have a mix of young, healthy people and people with chronic conditions if you're going to have affordable insurance.
Wayland in Opelousas. Wayland, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Rebecca Gee. Dr. Gee, of course, is Secretary of the Department of Health and Hospitals. Hi, Wayland.
Hi. My point is, it's great. It's really helped out the lower-income people, but we've also seen a drastic increase in the deductibles for working class people. So you have people that are on company insurance that are paying $6,000-$7,000 a year for the insurance, and then another $6,000 in deductibles before they pay anything.
That's right. So the Medicaid expansion, let's put that aside because that's working. That hasn't increased costs for you. But the Obamacare exchanges are a problem. There are a couple ideas I have about how to fix it. Senator Cassidy has put forward some good ideas. Some things you can do are auto enrollment, for example, just like Medicare does, where you have to join or have a reason not to. There are certain things we can do to fix it, and we're going to have to focus on that because it's irresponsible to let the insurance market tank. We've got to keep insurance affordable for people. We know how to do that. The question is the Congress and HHS going to allow us to do that?
Well, as far as the state and the budget, when I said you had a $14 billion budget, healthcare is one of the places that Louisiana goes all the time when there is a cut. That $14 billion, most of it comes from the federal government, I would think.
That's right. Over $10 billion is federal dollars.
Over $10 billion. That still leaves $4 billion from the state, and you've already been cut significantly. Can you take more reductions without people feeling the brunt of it?
Well, at this point, Jim, I think it's a bad calculus to cut us. As I said, we only pay, you know, if we get $10 million, we only have to put $4 million in. So every dollar you cut from us, you're cutting, usually if it's Medicaid, around $4 out of the state budget. That's services.
We some of these are matches, right?
That's so. Right, because we get the federal match. So we've really cut to the bone at this point. We have reduced the size of my staff. We've reduced all the programs that we thought were out of control spend. We've dealt with our managed care companies, gotten their rates lower. We're dealing with some of the supplemental payment issues. So there are always things we can do to be more efficient, but the numbers that they're talking about, we can't meet those numbers without cutting people's services. And, you know, my department, it's not just Medicaid. It's we affect every life in the state. If it's the water you drink or the food you eat in a restaurant, we inspect that restaurant. We inspect the hospital where you need to get your procedures done. We do evacuation. We're responsible in the event of any weather event to make sure that every hospital, nursing home, individual who has a high acuity problem gets out safely. So we really touch all those lives. So you start to cut into that, you really cut into safety issues for people of the state.
Well, you have gotten an indoctrination on appearing before legislative committees.
That's right.
How's that
I spent
experience?
6 hours last week. Listen, you know, they're not there. Often they're not there to learn. Sometimes they want the soundbite or the article to come out about their perspective. So it's not necessarily the give and take. What I found is much more valuable are those meetings I have not in the hearing with the members to say, hey, here's the picture. Let's have a dialogue. But, you know, that's politics. Some of politics is political theater. Some of it's the work that has to be done. And it's tough when you're a secretary of the biggest department because it means you're on the hot seat more frequently than most.
We're visiting with Dr. Rebecca Gee. She is a resilient person and has a job that requires it. She, you wouldn't know it by looking at her, but 9 years ago survived a near-fatal accident that took the life of her husband, and I'm sure you live with that every day.
I sure do. In fact, someone called me this morning, and I answered and said, how are you doing? I said, as Willie Nelson would say, I woke up this morning and I'm not dead yet. You know, I think when you're in an accident and you survive it, you realize how precious life is and that every day is borrowed time. I am grateful every day to be alive. And, you know, it gives me that perspective of being a patient. I'm also a doctor. I continue to see patients. And that brings a new perspective, I think, to the role of secretary. I think about the people getting care and what that's like when I make decisions.
Well, you almost didn't make it. You lost your husband. It was a freak accident, I'm sure. It's something you live with, but you've certainly rebounded well. And how much has that impacted what you do right now?
I mean, that changed my life completely. I always wanted to do policy that was public health oriented. In other words, not just take care of an individual patient, but do work that impacted the population. But again, I think it gives me a reminder that I'm lucky to be alive and that I have honestly, a responsibility. You have survivor guilt, right, when your spouse dies. My late husband, Alan, was a vibrant, thriving young man. He was a doctor. He was the funniest person I've ever met. I got dozens of letters from his patients when he died about how wonderful care he took of them. And so I was the one that lived, so I need to do for him and for me. And I'm also very lucky to have married my husband, David, and have 5 children now. So I feel so lucky to have had a second chance at life and to have been able to come to Louisiana, which happened as a result of meeting David. So this has been lucky.
Was there ever a point when you thought you wouldn't make it?
Yeah, I mean, when something like that happens, when it first happens, you kind of want to die. We were on a scooter and got hit by an SUV, and I had 18 broken ribs, double femur fracture, paralyzed left arm. It was pretty touch and go. I was in a wheelchair for 3 months. So, you know, but I'm pretty, you know, I'm pretty resilient, as you said. I know you are too. You've had challenges, you know. Life is the option. I lost my mom to breast cancer, as I said earlier, when I was 16, and I realized how precious it is, and I have always had a drive to come back. And I think something like that, I headed it on with optimism. When they told me I may not walk, I said, well, of course I'm going to walk, and I'm going to work at it. And that's the same attitude I take to this job. You know, with the Medicaid expansion, for example, you know, people said it was impossible. We won't give you another employee. They won't give you a dime to do it. And we managed to come up with one of the most creative plans to do it in the nation that other states have looked at now. So it's that kind of attitude. You have to be creative and you have to be optimistic.
You're working on other fronts in addition to Medicaid. In Louisiana, we have health numbers, as we know, that are not great. But one of your passions is infant mortality. How's that doing?
That's right. I'm so proud to say. So my former job was with Michelle Aletto, who's now my deputy, was to head up the Birth Outcomes Initiative. And we were tasked to lower prematurity and to decrease the number of babies who died before year one, or what's called infant mortality. Mm-hmm. And I'm proud to say we had one of the greatest successes in the nation. Nationally, infant mortality has gone down about 10 or 15%. We reduced it by 25%. And those numbers just came out last week. That means that over 1,000 babies have lived that wouldn't have lived, I think, as a result of these and other efforts. And particularly important for African American babies, because those babies die at about double the rate of Caucasian babies. So we have made tremendous strides. And that's the kind of thing when you put your mind to it and you have access to care and you have good care pathways for people that you really can make a difference on.
And you are also working on something that unfortunately is a big part of every community in this country right now, and that's the opiate abuse that we know has killed many young people in particular.
That's right, Jim. So we, our doctors give out more prescriptions than every man, woman, and child in the state. So we are one of the top 10 states in opioid abuse. And, you know, you don't think about it when you take that first pill, but what we know is if you have that gene that SNAP turns on, an addiction gene, you may die because of being given that prescription. So it's really important. And 80% of people, for example, who are addicted to heroin, they start on a prescription. So we've got to deal with that first prescription, and that's what we've done. We've put in limits on how many pills you can get. And there are also some really good bills this session dealing with mandatory education for docs, making sure they look up on a registry to see if you already had a prescription so you're not going pill shopping, these kinds of things. So there's a lot of effort that we can do that I think will have great results.
How significant is that epidemic right now of addiction to opiates?
Well, you know, more people die in parts of Baton Rouge from opioid addiction than from motor vehicle accidents and violence. So, and that's true for many parts of the state. So it's death, and it's not, it's people of all colors, of all ages, people of all incomes, and it's people you know. And so this is a real problem. And it was interesting. I was talking with Sheriff Norman. We've been meeting a lot about criminal justice and how we deal with the health aspects of criminal justice. And he said, you know, I think if any one thing you can do to reduce crime, this may be it. In other words, stopping addiction, because we think that about 75% of offenders have a drug addiction. So if we can stop people, and often they're doing the crime to feed their addiction, you know, to be able to afford the expensive pills or drugs they're addicted to. So if we can get people not addicted, it means A, I think we can reduce crime. B, I think we can get people who are a lot more successful at holding jobs. So it's a great thing, and it's a big problem in this state.
Well, you are a fireball. Your energy is contagious, but you are still working as a practicing doctor, right?
In
addition
right.
to a day job with 5,000 employees, you live in New Orleans, right?
Yes.
So you commute on a regular basis. How do you, and you because of your health issues, your injuries, you have to stay in shape. How do you do all this? And you've got 5 children and a husband.
Yeah, well, you have to prioritize, right? So I put first things first. You know, my family is first and this job is first. And, you know, when something happens like the floods last year in August, you know, I leave my family and I bunker up in Baton Rouge and it's 24/7 and that's what I do. And then sometimes if I have a sick kid or I have needs at home, sometimes I have to do a call instead of an in-person meeting because I need to prioritize my family. So I think frankly, Jim, that When I was interviewing for this job, I had a lot of people say, oh, you know, Dr. Gee or Rebecca, you can't do that. You can't do that with 5 kids. How could you do a job? You're a woman with these young kids, and my girls are 4, so they're young. And I said, well, you know, I don't want anyone to tell my girls that, when they get to be my age, if anyone ever offers them a job of this caliber, they ought to be excited about it and say, hell yeah, I'm doing that. They shouldn't be saying, because I'm a woman and I have kids, I can't. So I said, well, I have to do it. I have to find a way to show my kids how to do it, or they, you know, they will be told those kinds of things. And that kind of attitude has to go away. You can manage, but you have to do it differently. And Jim, one of the things I think that I have to do that I think is a good way to work is I work as a team. It's not just about the Rebecca Gee Show. It's about my team. And sometimes they get credit and sometimes they work or they give a speech or they run. You know, and as long as I hire good people, and I do, and they do their jobs and they do, you know, we can work together, and it's just not about one person.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're juggling a lot of balls effectively. And we do have a listener, Carol, who wanted you to repeat the numbers you just gave about the opioid addiction and people lost to it in Louisiana. You say more than auto accidents?
More than in East Baton Rouge, for example, it's more than auto accidents and violence combined.
More than auto accidents and violence combined. And this has been around a while, but certainly to this extent, it's a new situation. Is there a concern that this is going to spiral even more so?
Well, you know, I think the big problem was, and there's a great book about this called Dreamland, of this company Purdue Pharma, really sold a bill of goods to the American people and said, you know, these pills aren't addicting, and you got to treat pain. It's a vital sign. Everyone needs opioids for pain. And it caused a real problem. So I really see the problem going down. I think the fact that, you know, the head of the medical society, Bo Clark, who's the coroner of East Baton Rouge, is on top of it, and our doctors are now educated. The problem is going to decrease, because it was really this issue of pushing all of these opioids on people and the impact that had on addiction.
Well, I took opioids when I had my car accident. I suspect you took them when you had your accident. And as you say, some people are just more prone to addiction than others of this particular kind.
That's right. And thank God I don't have that gene, because I hated being on them. They make you constipated. They make you loopy. But, you know, they're not fun for me. But, you know, but they are for a lot of people. And unfortunately, I think, you know, that and as a practicing gynecologist, you know, we didn't get training. I used to give out pills for normal deliveries, pills for C-sections, you know, 30, 60 pills for hysterectomy. We didn't get training on how many, you know, on pain management, how you do opioids. So I think that the doctors are realizing that it's every profession, and that we have a long way to go. But I think that there's a real knowledge about this. As I said, it's every community, every color, every income. People know someone. And so I think that you'll see the tide turning.
Well, your passion is evident, and we appreciate the job you're doing for the state. Thank you for joining us today, Dr. Rebecca Gee.
Thanks, Jim, for having me. Take care.